We have a forum now, so we will start the meeting. And we have minutes. We do. We have the minutes from April 7th. Somebody want to move those minutes? Then Representative Murphy moves the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the minutes are adopted, and now we're going to House File 266 by Representative Fritz. And Fritz moves that House File 266 be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 266, the parental fees legislation. This bill provides clarifying language requested by DHS and DEED so that parental fees payments can be included as part of an employer's health care flexible spending account. The amendment eliminates the need for a fiscal note. And I do have a gentleman here if there are any questions, but I don't believe.
Do you want to move the amendment first?
Yes.
So Representative Fritz moves the A1 amendment, which takes out the fiscal part of this bill. Any discussion of the amendment? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we've adopted the A1 amendment, and the gentleman's here to testify.
I have the gentleman here if there are any questions on the amendment or on this bill itself. The new language reads, all reimbursements must include a notice that the amount reimbursed may be taxable income if the parent paid for the parent's fee through an employer's health care flexible spending account under the IRS code section 125, and that the parent is responsible for paying the taxes owed on the amount reimbursed. If the parent pays more in parental fees than services provided, then the parent is reimbursed the balance. The balance would then be taxable income. The language provides that clarification. This language actually goes back to the original language.
Okay. Any discussion? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question here then, that does this fit with current federal law? Are we all okay then with current federal law, or does it allow for both ways? If it's in federal law, they can use that, and if it's not, this has a way to take care of it without being in conflict with federal law?
Representative Fritz.
Yes, that is correct.
Mm-hmm. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Fritz moves... renews her motion that House File 266, as amended, be recommended to pass and returned to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the bill is approved and sent to the Finance Committee. Next, we have Representative Thiessen with House File 384.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that House File 384 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay. Then you have an amendment?
Yeah, I'd move the DE2 amendment, Mr. Chair.
So Representative Thiessen moves the bill and then moves the DE2 amendment. Would you describe the amendment?
I will.
It looks thicker than the bill.
I will, Mr. Chair. This is legislation that actually has passed through the Policy Committee and Civil Law about health information technology and conforming so that we can pull down as many federal dollars from the federal stimulus bill as possible for electronic technology purposes. It's kind of the pure policy part of that. And then that is added on here to make this kind of an electronic record bill, I guess. The other part, House File 384, we actually originally sent to the floor It was returned back to finances at a $66,000 fiscal note. We've taken out a date now in the amendment of 2011 so that this is just going to get in the queue of stuff that the department is already doing, and that eliminates the fiscal note so we can send the legislation back to the floor now. There's a committee that already does kind of this uniformity of standards work, and this would just fall in their queue of doing that work. And I don't know if the department wants to testify this. They're nodding their heads that it's, that there's no fiscal notice if we do this.
I see heads nodding. So any questions for the author or discussion? Representative Kiffmeyer.
I guess it's my day, Mr. Chairman. Representative Peekson, if there's no fiscal note and if this is put in place, and is it kind of that if you don't do it, it doesn't cost anything?
Mr. Chair, as to the kind of original bill you're talking about that we've amended now,
yes. No,
I don't think it's exactly that. What the original bill was doing was saying this is going to, this work about creating the technology to kind of interchange the information was going to jump ahead of the queue that they already have planned out in their work plan. So now it won't do that. It'll just fit in towards the end of their work plan, which might get done by 2011, but might not quite. So they're not going to have to employ anybody new to do this additional work.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
So then my understanding is that they have already built in staff or kind of a queue of projects that they already have folks to do for. If this, they get done with those, they get to this one, that's why there would be no additional cost to them.
Mr. Representative Kiffmeyer, that's my understanding, correct.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, just one other follow-up question.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And if they don't get this done in this biennium, is this a something that we would see back maybe next year as a ongoing project?
Maybe Mr. Golden can, or Dr. Golden can address your question because he's going to be doing it. So that might be better, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Golden, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Jim Golden from the Minnesota Department of Health. Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, with regard to your question, a lot of this administrative simplification fits into a package of work that is being done collaboratively through something called the Minnesota Administrative Uniformity Committee. That is a private committee which is staffed by the Department of Health to work on uniform billing and coding issues. And they have a work plan that extends out over 2 to 3 years, looking at issues that the state needs for federal compliance, looking at issues that we see on the horizon, and looking at issues that are likely to add to uniformity and administrative simplification. By taking out the requirements for the time and the report, what we have said is that the issues that are addressed here, we would be able to address within the next 6 to 36 months, depending on the issue. So we would anticipate that these issues would be addressed sometime within the next 6 to 36 months, because there's a fair number of issues here. So.
Yes, but Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
And if the 36 months means that would be into that 2012 fiscal year, will it continue to not have a fiscal note in 2012 either?
Mr. Chair, committee members, that's correct. The work around uniform billing and coding is funded with a $148,000 base appropriation that works on these issues on an ongoing basis.
Representative Kiffmeyer, this actually was the governor's initiative. I think it was like 15 years ago the legislature passed something mandating that there be uniform billing by the insurance companies. And they met for 15 years. And the governor decided that was long enough, and he went to Utah with Representative Peason.
And Representative Emmer, believe it or not.
And found out how Utah managed to have one form for all insurance companies. And so this is a continuation of that.
Thank you.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you very much, Chairman. And I'll just remind Representative Peason, we agreed that what happens in Utah stays in Utah. Now, on the bill, the question, and it's the amendment, and I don't know if this is for you, Representative Peason, or for the witness, but it appears to be more than just language that would allow the state of Minnesota to access federal dollars. Is there a reason why you've got extra language? And I'll just give you an example. If you look under line 2.10 and you've got subpart F, you define qualified electronic health records. Why are we adding this language? Why can't we just have a almost a one-line piece of legislation that authorizes the state to access these dollars?
Oh, and Mr. Chair, and I represent these, you know, I'm going to put Mr. Golden, it'll be quicker. It's to conform what we have in current law to federal law. So we match up more closely, but Mr. Golden can discuss it more in detail.
Mr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Representative Emmer, the reason is previously the legislature had passed a requirement that all health care providers have an interoperable electronic health record by 2015. One of the questions that providers have rightly asked about that is, what is an interoperable electronic health record? Kind of where are the boundaries? What would be necessary to meet that requirement? How do we know that the systems that we have are adequate? What we have done with this, the HITECH Act, which is the federal stimulus around HIT, also has requirements for what is the minimum necessary to be a meaningful user of electronic health records. It defines two types of health records. There are health records that are certified health records. Those are records, electronic health record systems that have gone through a formal certification process. There are other areas, particularly specialty areas, where perhaps they have not gone through the queue of the certification or they haven't defined all of their specs on that. Those providers would still be eligible for incentive payments, but they would be required to have a system that meets the definition for a qualified electronic health record. So our purpose in putting these definitions in is to ensure that the requirements we have around providers having an interoperable electronic health record are consistent with the stimulus package's definitions for what it would take for a provider to meet the requirements to get the incentive funds.
And Mr. Gold, I don't know that that answers my question. Those are a lot of words to essentially say that you put in the definition of qualified electronic health records so it matches what's already in the HITECH Act. Is the definition, as it's stated from lines 2.10 to 2.17, is that part of Title 13? If this is the way it's supposed to read, Title 13 and Division B and Title 4 of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009.
Mr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, it is my it's my understanding that that is the definition from Division A, Title 4 of the HITECH Act.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Golden, what are the other sources that it's referring to in 2.17?
Mr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I would assume that that is ensuring that a physician or a clinic's electronic health record has the ability to integrate with such things as the storage devices that hold x-rays, the types of devices that hold things like EKGs, those types of other systems which tend to be standalone systems, to ensure that when a healthcare provider is looking at their electronic health record, they have not only the information that they've been put there, but also the other types of information that would support a physician's decision making.
Mr. Chair, and I should have read this over the holiday, and I will admit that I did not. Believe me, though, if it's going to go back to the floor, I will, and maybe we'll have more of a discussion there. Are you telling me or telling us, Mr. Golden, that the other sources, that language comes directly from the federal act and it's not defined? It's that broad?
Mr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, that is what I'm telling you. I certainly could look that up to verify that for you, but I'm almost positive we took this definition exactly as is in the federal law.
Thank you.
Certainly can verify that, though.
Okay. Representative Abler.
Thank you, and I just want to get some stuff on the record about one of my misunderstandings earlier, which I've had clarified, but on page 5, the whole section, subdivision 5, that whole business about collecting data for assessment, there must be, under the dictionary, under the word data, there must be like 47 definitions for it. and this data is actually data about record keeping and billing information and not data about patients. And then at the end of the sentence, on 611, it says nothing talks about collecting individual patient data. And I asked Dr. Golden about this and Rep. Thiessen about this earlier. And I wish there were a better word to clarify this, but on page, on line 5, 16, 519, 532, 536, 6.6, and even in the header, it talks about data. And do you just want to clarify for me, just for the record, so people know what data that is and what it's not, Dr. Golden?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, absolutely. The total amount of money that the federal government is putting into health information technology through the stimulus package is about $31 billion. I think they hope to have about a $12 billion offset in penalties in the out years, but it's a substantial amount of money. And one of the things that Congress did in just about every single section of the bill, as well as the studies that are required, is they wanted to make sure anyone that's getting this money can demonstrate that we're actually, as a country, getting something for the amount of money that's being invested in that. So they require a number of data reports. They want to make sure what we're actually getting for that money. So the type of data that we anticipate that would need to be collected to be able to do this would be really things such as, does your practice, does your clinic, does your hospital have an electronic health record? What are you using that electronic health record for? Are you using it for decision support with prescription drugs? Do you have flags that let you know when you're about to prescribe something that would cause an interaction? Do you have other decision support types of mechanisms that would help with this? Are you using the system to exchange information? Do you have it in all aspects? Do you have physician notes? Another aspect of data that would need to be collected, again, is business data. Under both Medicare and Medicaid, in order to be eligible for the incentives, the incentives are based in Medicare on the volume of Medicare business that you're doing. So we anticipate that either the state and or the federal government would need to have some information about payer mix, which would be private, Medicaid, Medicare, and uninsured. Likewise, for sure, on the Medicaid side within the state, in order for DHS to be able to administer the Medicaid program, they will need to know for hospitals and certain types of providers what their Medicaid volume is. And while they might have a lot of information about what their Medicaid volume is, we would also need to have some breakdown of what their other books of business are. So all of the data that's being collected here is either for the purposes of administering the incentive program or to be able to report back on what a practice is using electronic health records for. None of this data involves patient data. None of this data involves information that would be in a patient's health record that's there. None of the data that the state would ask for or touch involves information that would be exchanged between healthcare providers as part of patient treatment.
Thank you. Sure. And that was comforting to me. I just didn't know why it wasn't a better word than data for us. But, so it's actually kind of technical information, which apparently is not defined, but this data. I can't imagine where this is, how long the data definitions are. So I think that I feel better about that. And my concern when I read it originally was burden on especially small providers trying to put up with that. And apparently it's a finite list of things about what they're doing. Actually provoked a second question. Can you talk about the $12 billion in penalties? So we're just, the country's getting $31 billion in money going out. Who's going to pay the penalty? And is that going to come out of the $31 billion, or is that going to come out of some clinic that fell afoul of this section that I'm trying to rescue people from?
Dr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, the penalties in the bill...
The federal bill.
...relate primarily to Medicare. So, for example, for hospitals and physicians who are not meaningful users of electronic health records by 2016. There are payment penalties in their payment rates that will be paid for both CPS hospitals, the large acute care hospitals, as well as for physicians that are doing Medicare. Those would be penalties in their Medicare rates, and that is how they would anticipate the bulk of the $12 billion. I do think that the Congressional Budget Office scored some savings for improved quality as well.
Okay. Representative Aber.
And so do they have to get part of the $31 billion to be eligible to pay back the $12 billion? Or could a little hospital, and I mean, this is federal law, so we're stuck with it, but it seems like, are people going to know that these little small hospitals, I'm sure my big hospital, Alliance, is going to figure it out, so I'm not so worried about them, and maybe they're in the audience, they're worried about it too, but I can imagine are you going to help small hospitals know this and not get penalized? Is this going to be a 2016 problem for the next legislature then?
Well, and Mr. Chair, the one thing that the state can do is actually get help out to those folks to get these records in place. And if you look at page 7 and 8 of the bill, we're actually targeting, hopefully prioritizing the federal dollars and grants to go to, well, it listed out there, critical access hospitals, federally qualified health centers, entities that serve the uninsured, and then individual and small group practices. And so we're trying to target this money so that they actually can meet that deadline.
And just one thing, I appreciate the time. And the best thing about this is that there's no rulemaking in here. It's all just language. And so I think I'm right about that. And so we've, in the past, the Department of Health and rulemaking has had some interesting jags and curves. And so at least this way it's all written in plain or not so plain English. So people can see what's out there, and the department needn't react by rulemaking. Is that correct, Dr. Golden? There's no rulemaking coming out of this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, that's correct. This bill does not have any rulemaking associated with it. And I can assure you that we are working with all of the hospitals to make them aware of this and to help them understand where they can get their incentive payments and the consequences of 2016. We've been working with the hospital association already.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I could incorporate, I don't think we've adopted the amendment yet.
No, we have not.
So if I can incorporate one word into the amendment as well, it's on page 7.20. Before the word hospitals, insert the word nonprofit.
So Representative Thiessen moves.
Mr. Chair, hold on 1 minute.
It incorporated.
Okay. So this actually is a little bit more complicated amendment. So can I just read it to you?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So it is to add nonprofits. And then to take out the words on line 7.20, eligible for rural hospital capital improvement grants as defined, and on 7.21, take out in section 144.148, and then insert licensed under sections 144.50 to 144.56. And that actually expands the group of hospitals that could qualify for this money.
Why don't you repeat that?
Okay, I will.
Make sure we get it
yep.
there right.
So after the 3 on line 7.20, insert the word nonprofit, and then delete everything after the word hospital. Line 7.21, delete everything, and then insert licensed under section 144.50 to 144.56.
Okay, so that's been incorporated into his amendment, and while we're at that point, why don't we adopt the amendment? So all those in favor of the DE2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we now have the DE2 amendment. Let's see. Okay, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Thiessen. When I was driving in today, I was listening to President Obama's 5-pillar speech, and the 4th pillar is health care reform. And he spent a majority, I'd say at least half of the time, talking about electronic medical records and the implementation. And I was really blown away by the amount of money that we're looking at implementing within this. And the $31 billion has been referenced. But I'm wondering a couple of things, and perhaps Dr. Golden can talk about this. Just Does this bill that we're reviewing help us to implement that in a timely fashion, number one, and do we have the ability to accept and distribute these funds within that means? I know that we've had difficulty getting this up and running for the past 10 years across the state. It's very slow, it's very arduous, very expensive, but just do we have the capacity to spend that much money that quickly?
Dr. Golden.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, let me tell you about the legislature's wisdom 2 years ago. There was a proposal to provide $29.5 million in grants to particularly safety net providers to help implement electronic health records. Where the legislature ultimately ended up at the end of session was that we had half of that, $14.5 million, and it was equally divided between grants and loans, interest-free loans at the time, to be able to help, again, safety net providers. There are two big problems that providers have. The first is capital. How the heck do you finance one of these systems? The second biggest problem is know-how. What the federal bill does is it addresses both of those issues. And what this bill does is make sure that we can pull down as much of that federal money to help with that as possible. So, for example, the loan program, which is essentially Section 2 of this amendment, what we anticipate is that in the governor's supplemental budget, there was $4 million to serve as a state match to a federal loan program specifically for electronic health records. That would allow us to pull down $20 million in federal funds so that we would have a loan pool of $24.5 million. There are also some other ways to potentially increase that, which would include private contributions. And we've been talking with Deed about potentially some revenue bonds that they already have existing authority for that would be specifically for rural critical access hospitals. And so what this language does is it allows the state to be able to take the loan program, which we have already been operating for 2 years, which we have all of the policies and procedures, we have all of the methodology to evaluate providers' ability to pay back a loan, and to take that and get as much of that federal money as we can, work with providers to get that money into their system to get electronic health records in place using the loan money to be able to secure their incentive payments. Their incentive payments then, of course, could help to either to pay off that loan or to be used for whatever else they would prefer to use that for. So that's an example of where we clearly are using this language to position ourselves quite well for the federal package.
Representative Dean.
And Mr. Chair and Dr. Golden, could you talk just in raw terms, how much money have we spent on electronic medical records in the last 2 years, and how much do we propose to spend in the next 2 years as a result of the stimulus money?
Dr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, a question. When you say we, do you mean state government or do you mean the state of Minnesota and the health providers in both the public and private sector?
Representative Dean.
Dr. Goldman, I guess for just from the state standpoint of managing those dollars.
Dr. Goldman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, the amount that the Department of Health has spent is in the last biennium we had $14.5 million, which were for grants, loans, and then $350,000 to support the eHealth Advisory Committee, which is a 26-member public-private group of stakeholders, which helps to set the overall direction within the state. In the previous biennium, there was a $1.5 million grant program, as well as, I think, $200,000 for the eHealth Advisory Committee. So we've spent, as a state, at the Department of Health over the past couple of years, right in the neighborhood of $16.5 million.
Representative Dean.
And Dr. Golden, what do we propose, how much money do we propose to distribute through the state over the next 2 years?
Dr. Golden.
And with the federal thing, I just want to get an idea of scale because I think it's quite staggering.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, I think that what's helpful to understand is in the bill, in the federal bill, there are two pots of money. There is $2 billion, which is money that would be coming to the state, that the state could then use to help coordinate activities as well as to give out in loans. Our estimate of that amount is $20 million, hopefully, that we would pull $24 million between state and federal for loans, a few million, hopefully, for coordinating activities from the federal government. The real money in the bill is not that money that's flowing through the state. The real money is in the incentives, in the Medicare and Medicaid incentive payments. That is money that a provider would get, a hospital would get for being a meaningful user of an electronic health record. We have done calculations for hospitals. For the hospitals alone, we show that they, over the next 4 years, would receive $1.5 to $8.5 million. We estimate that the total amount of money that would be coming in through Medicare and Medicaid incentive payments would be in the neighborhood of $400 to $700 million.
And finally, Representative Thiessen, in policy, did anyone speak against this bill, particularly with the data practice or the data privacy, and are they here today?
Mr. Chair, it went to civil law, and I don't think anybody testified. Representative Holberg, though, asked several questions about that issue, and we actually inserted, as a result of that exchange, that language about on point 611, nothing in the section authorized the collection of individual patient data, which was never the intent, but it's good to clarify it in the statute. I don't remember in policy if anybody testified or not, but where the committee that jurisdiction over that issue, civil law, did have, we had a pretty, 10-minute discussion about that with Representative Holbert and others.
Just in terms of dollars for individual hospitals, St. Mary's Duluth Clinic spent about $80 million to get their system up. St. Luke's Hospital spent, which is a smaller hospital, spent about $40 million. And strangely enough, the two systems can't talk to each other. So one of the things that goes on in here is that they will be interoperable, and they will be, depending on which hospital the ambulance takes me to, will be able to get my records from the other one. And Dr. Golden, could you give the committee some idea of where Minnesota stands nationally in terms of the percentage of physicians or hospitals that are already electronic medical records?
Mr. Chair, certainly. You know what? With regard to primary care clinics, Minnesota has one of the highest adoption rates that there is. The last survey that we worked on with Stratus Health showed that in rural area, primary care clinics had about a 58% adoption rate. So that meant that about 58% of them had some components of an electronic health record in place. In the urban area, it was closer to about 75-76%. I think overall we were in the high 60s. That is an extraordinarily high adoption rate compared to just about any state in the country. With regard to hospitals, some of our analysis has shown that Minnesota is very high with regard to having some components of an electronic health record in place. The most recent thing that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine actually took a look at just moving beyond adoption. So the first is, do you have a system in place? Do you actually have the technology? But really what you want to do is you want to be able to use this as a tool to really improve the type of care that you're delivering and the quality of care that the patient is getting. And there they're looking at a variety of things, such as, are the physician notes in the electronic health record? Are the nurse notes in there? Is the medication history available through the electronic health record? If you're about to prescribe something in the wrong dosage, does the electronic health record put a flag there for you? Does it put a flag there to remind you of other services that you might need to provide to this patient because they're a diabetic? And what that actually showed was that as a nation we are doing rather poorly that if you look at what is a comprehensive electronic health record that provides all of those tools, we're at about 1.2% nationally. When you simply take out physician notes and nurse notes, what you see is it climbs to about 8 or 9%. So what I would say is Minnesota is as advanced as just about any state. Clearly we're in the top 5 with regard to adoption. So just putting the technology in place. Where Minnesota and everyone else needs to go is to start thinking about how do we use this as a tool to really deliver better care to our patients. And I think that will be one of the large focuses over the next 5 to 7 years of how do we start to use this technology to improve care and reduce costs.
Representative Gottlob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, I appreciate the bill. I know one of the concerns I've heard from providers, and forgive me if you've already covered this issue, but as we develop technology standards, and providers are telling us how much money they're having to spend upgrading their systems. So CenterCare, for example, I forget the number they threw out, but it's a huge amount of money that providers are spending to get these systems up to speed. And one of their concerns is, what if we end up upgrading or installing a system that either doesn't talk with other systems it's going to need to talk to down the road, either state or federal? And are we going to be on the right platform so that people don't spend a ton of money and add to the cost of our health care without it being interoperable and consistent? And I know your bill talks about technology standards, but maybe you could speak to that a little bit.
Dr. Golden,
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, yes, one of the big problems has been standards. And oddly enough, it's not that there aren't standards, it's actually that there are so many standards. And the hospital industry has really been a leader in that, and that's really been part of what the certification process is. So hospital inpatient has had a certification in place for at least 2.5 years at this point, where the idea is that technology vendors are able to go at that. Previously, it was a private entity that did certification, and what the certification did is that you are able to use certain standards, you're able to exchange the information using these standards, and that this fits into a larger framework. What has been done under the federal stimulus package is that the standards activity has been accelerated as well as put into a quasi-public entity so that it could be funded by the federal government as well. And I think one thing to think about is, as I said previously, there's $2 billion that was on the side to figure out how to implement this stuff. $320 million of that is dedicated in the federal bill. That leaves $1.68 billion for 4 years of activities. Previously, the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology had $63 million a year. So one of their biggest efforts is going to be to get standards in place, defined, and into the certification process. And so I think that hospitals in particular are well positioned, and if they're using a certified system, I think they can feel reasonably confident that they won't be going in a direction that is putting money down the drain.
Representative Gottwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Golden, I appreciate that. I guess I'm looking for some assurance, and I know providers are very concerned about this. They've had to spend so much money already to get up to speed with electronic records, and they're very concerned that they may have already jumped on the horse that's not going to be the one ridden, and that they're going to have to switch horses in mainstream or I forget what the vendor is, who the vendor is, who most of the hospitals and doctors have been using already, but they're already talking about systems, even on the same software package, not being able to speak to each other. And the concern is now we establish standards, once we finally get the funding and get this quasi-governmental thing up to speed, that sets a new standard, and they've got to shift horses once again at great cost. What assurances do we have? Are there any in this bill that would help say, okay, you guys have already gone down this road a long way, you've spent a lot of money, and we're not going to put that to waste?
Dr. Golden.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I think the system you were thinking of is probably the Epic system. That is one of the dominant vendors in this market, and they are a certified system. I think there are a number of challenges that hospitals face in that these are amazingly complex pieces of technology with lots of things that can be done, lots of standards that can be exchanged. I would say this, for people that are using a certified technology, it will be able to be used with the standards that will be coming out of the federal government that will be the future for where this is going. But I do think that it highlights another important function that has been going on and working quite well within Minnesota, and that is the need to prioritize. There is a lot of healthcare information that needs to be exchanged from one provider to another provider as a patient changes settings. And what we really need to do as a state, as a healthcare community, is to prioritize what is the most important information so that we can all put our limited time and energy and effort into those pieces of data, those exchanges of information, and not be happen to put in whatever we think might be a good idea. So, for example, as a state, the legislature and the eHealth Advisory Committee have prioritized e-prescribing, which would be a variety of information. It would be a script, a prescription flowing from your provider to the pharmacy. It would be a medication history coming from your payer to your provider. It would be interactions. That has been prioritized in law with the 2011 requirement, and the community has been working very hard in that. Other things that are a very high priority would be things such as a problem list, allergies, a continuity of care document. So that's the kind of the base information that goes. What we will be doing as a state through the eHealth Advisory Committee is working with hospitals, nursing homes, physicians, clinics, the industry, vendors, to say this is the priorities for Minnesota. Our priorities are going to be e-prescribing. They are going to be a continuity of care document. We do need to see what the feds are going to come out with in probably June with regard to their interests and directions. We'll want to see how we react to those. But again, once we have priorities, that's what we want people working on. It's not that there isn't other information that is a good idea to exchange, but we can't all be trying to exchange different data. And so I guess the assurance that I would tell you is we have a very strong functioning advisory committee that has actually, I think, brought bills before the legislature in each of the last two or three years trying to help set those priorities. We continue to do that. In the governor's budget, there is $350,000 for the ongoing funding of that, and we are also being directed to apply for a grant.